Welcome back to the Get Coaching Podcast, your go-to podcast for all things coaching and personal development. My name is Jessica Palmer, founder of The Coaching Lab, and also host of this podcast that you're watching or listening to right now. If you are currently listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, just want to let you know that you can head on over to YouTube and you can come and watch our facial expressions, which is, I feel, is so much more fun. So I encourage that as well. So my YouTube channel is Jessica Palmer Official. So I'm looking forward to this discussion. This is going to be really, really powerful. I don't know the core topics that are going to pop up, because whenever I have a discussion with this beautiful woman, something special, profound always comes through. So who am I interviewing today? Today, I am interviewing Georgia Hansen. Georgia Hansen is a third level priestess. She's an absolute wizard when it comes to PR, publication, marketing. She is the mother of five beautiful babies, four whom are Earthside, and then also one which resides in the infinite cosmos. And this experience that beautiful Georgia has had with her angel baby definitely transformed her life and has really guided her towards this new work that she does, the way that she does everything now, which is using her intuition. So she now combines her intuition, all things that she does with her publications experience, and just her life experience, and just everything that she has to share is, it's deep, it's from the heart, and there's just a beautiful fullness. That's what I feel when I speak with Georgia. So Georgia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. That's a beautiful introduction. I don't know if anyone's can top that.
I do pride myself on that, on sharing. You know, I really think that the introductions are really important, because it's like, well, who am I listening to? Like, I feel like I want to know that as a listener. Yeah. Who the hell am I listening to? Like, why should I listen to them?
Yeah.
What's this person about?
Yeah. Yeah. You nailed it in a lot of ways. Yeah. Thank you for that.
You're so welcome. And you know, there are so many topics that we can go into, and I'd really love to for you to just share your life experience and if there's a message that's coming through for you to share today.
Well, I have had an extraordinary life, and I think I'm the culmination of many different extraordinary life experiences. I used to be living in the victim mentality of these events that would happen to me. I started my life in poverty. We were living in poverty. And I don't know why this is coming up, but obviously it's meant to. But poverty as in, you know, wealth. We didn't have much money, but we had a lot of love. And I lost my dad when I was 6 years old. He died of esophageal cancer. And so for the next, I guess, throughout my teenagehood, I was mourning, I guess, the loss of my father. I had a really amazing stepdad who my mum met, within a few years. And so I had a really good father figure, but I still mourned my dad a lot of the time. I saw things as a child that didn't make sense to me, and so I shut them down. Mm. I saw and I felt and I sensed things that scared the crap out of me, as a lot of intuitives do experience. And so I shut it all down. I knew that I was very different. I knew that I had something that I wasn't like normal people, I guess, that I experienced things in a way and with a perception that others didn't. And that made me feel, I guess, you know, out of place. And it wasn't until my early 30s, I had more and more life experiences. In my late 20s, I married my husband, and I choose not to talk about there's experiences that we had in our first few years of marriage because they involve others. And I, you know, out of respect for them, I don't talk about that, but I took on four kids basically as my own and raised them and went through a whole lot of other stuff. And during that period is when I was really in my victim mentality and like, why is this happening to me? Why can't the universe give me a break? What, you know, all of the things that we go into as, you know, when we're having experience until we wake up, until we realize that it's actually all happening for us. And it was, I was having a deep awakening, and it was when I first, and I had mentors and I was doing a lot of like learning about all of this stuff. And I started to use it to help guide my life and to change the perception, which is, as A Course in Miracles tells us, a miracle is the definition of a miracle. So when I changed my perception and I realized that I could use my intuition and guidance to change things, suddenly things started happening and my life shifted. Like my stepchildren were like, the whole situation changed. And it was when I heard my dad's voice in his thick Scottish accent.
And he's Scottish, is he?
He's Scottish. Mm. And I heard him for the first time I was 30, like in my early 30s, and he'd been dead since I was six. And I heard him say, "You're gonna do your bloody head in," or something like that. I can't even get his accent right, but I heard him so strong. And I realized that I'm okay, I'm held. Because my first mentors were teaching me to white light everything and protect yourself and protect your energy and your beacon, and so you can draw in these lower energies. And so I was like I was almost driving myself mental. And people do have breakdowns when they go through an awakening process and they're not sure of, like, it's scary. It can be scary if you don't have people guiding you through that. And the people that were guiding me through that at the time were very much of like, they were working, like they were exorcism like people. They were, you know, so they, that was what their work was. And so I was very, very tired, like scared. And it was then that moment that shifted. Okay, that I'm actually okay, and I have light on my side. It's not all dark. It's not, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when I realized I could start to shift, not just, you know, shift my perspective, but also that had a massive roll-on effect of everything else in my life. And I started realizing that actually everything is working in divine order. Universe has our back. And no matter what we experience is happening for a reason. And everything since then has just been like so synchronistic and in such divine order. Even, you know, I had the catalyst that changed my life, as you so spoke about, was losing my daughter 3.5 years ago. And in the moment that I found out that there was no heartbeat, within, I had the primal screams and what, you know, of a mother who's lost her young. But then this energy came through me and it was like, so I was already on this awakening journey, but then this just was like, it's tenfolded everything. And I feel like God came through me and entered every cell of my being. And I still get shivers because I can feel it. And the echo of the sound was like, you know, off Dogma, when Alanis Morissette lets out that sound. I don't know if you've seen that movie, if you ever seen it.
I get the reference.
Yeah, she is God. Alanis Morissette is God, and okay, she lets out this sound at the end, and it's just like it echoes. And that's the feeling that I got. And the voice said to me, everything is actually going to be okay. And this is like, I'm in the throes of labor, knowing that I've got a baby girl who's not coming with breath. And I knew that somehow I would be okay. And I think it's that moment that changed me from being that I'm two different women in the same body. Like I was before that.
Can you describe how that felt? Because I think that people who haven't experienced that, they can't quite comprehend, they can't even fathom it, right? This Well, you know, because you were made aware prior to, well, I mean, as you've gone to the hospital, you've discovered there's no heartbeat, you're still going through this rite of, this sacred rite of passage to birth your beautiful daughter.
Yeah.
And you've had your primal scream. You've then heard, you know, the voice of, you know, what you refer to as God. I'd love for you to describe on a physiological level what that felt like in your body, because there's this level of trust, that just this instant level of trust that kind of came from what most people would say from nowhere.
Mm.
Right? So I'd love to describe how that felt when you got that instant level of trust and that instant level of this is what is happening. But there was a different level of warmth to that experience for you.
Yeah. So every second of that whole thing is just imprinted like firmly in my being. I remember the time on the clock on the wall. I remember the teardrops coming down my face. I was in, so by that stage my labor was past active. I was having maybe 10, 20 seconds break in between contractions.
Mm.
So it was intense, and I didn't know how much I was dilated or anything at that point. They hadn't even checked, but I was like, I knew that it was not far off. Everything stopped. It was like I suddenly, for those few moments, like that, you know, the intensity of labor at that point in time is it's beyond description, isn't it? Like.
Yes, it's
beyond description.
It's that moment of transition where, like, they say that mothers, just before they're about to, you know, coming to, we've got the home stretch, right, the home run, our brains tend to go into gamma state, which is like well beyond, for those who don't understand, you know, there's like alpha brain waves, you know, there's more and there's
theta,
more.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's like gamma is very, very rare. Like, it's extremely rare. It's just, you're literally not even in this world. Like, you're not.
No.
And there's like a calm. Mm. There's this odd calm, that level of presence where you're just like, boom.
Yeah. So I wasn't because there was, I think I was like 4 or 5 centimeters. So I wasn't at that transition state yet, but I was in the stages before that where it was, the pain was intense. Mm. And I just remember being lying on my side, like after so three doctors have told us, the third doctor it's been confirmed by one, by two, and by the third doctor, the most senior doctor in the hospital that night. And at that point, when he told me, I just wanted her to be ripped open, like cut me open, take her out. I can't, like, just get her out of me. And he convinced me that wasn't the best thing for me. And I remember him saying, in my 17 years of obstetrics, I've never not been able to convince a woman to do this naturally, because there was a few different reasons, but I trusted him. Like, he had this calmness and this kindness that I knew, and he was firm, though. He was like, he was telling me, and I trusted him that he was right. And he said, we'll give you whatever you need. Like, we'll give you whatever you need to get through this, but I'm telling you, like, you need to do this. And so I succumbed to the fact that I still had to deliver her. And I remember lying on my side, and suddenly my husband, who was on that side of me, was just like here in my face.
Mm.
And I was still in disbelief a little bit, I think, but it was when he grabbed my hand, my face, and I said, this is not happening. And he said, yes, it is. It's true. She's gone. And when, you know, I saw his tears, that was the moment that it hit. And then I talk about this so often. And then it was that, it was like the screams that came out of me that they're not human. They're not human. They're primal and they're deep, like they're echoing out to the cosmos. And I believe now, thinking about it, that that's like a calling in of other entities, you know, of angels, of something else to come in, because in that human state, it's not, you need more than what humans can deliver. And it was not long after that I just felt this, it is like a calmness. It was just, it was like it washed over me and took everything away. The pain, it was like, it was a numbness, but at the same time, it wasn't like a, it was like all of the emotion was stripped from me, but there was just this grace. It wasn't like, I still felt grace. I still felt like this is the way it's meant to be. Like and it was only like a split second, because after that I still went back into like all of the emotions that I was feeling and the labor came back. But it was just this moment of complete and utter grace. God's grace, God's will came through me, and it was, and then I heard, everything is actually going to be okay. And for that split second, it's like this, I wouldn't call it, maybe not a bliss state, but just this, yeah, like that's the only way I can describe it. It's just this grace that I would be okay. And no matter what happened from here, like I would live out my life and it would be okay. Whether she, you know, I was still thinking even in that moment, like that she would come back or that something would happen. Like I would, because what people, I guess, don't understand is that to me, she wasn't just a baby. Like she was a culmination of many dreams and many years of dreaming for this baby girl that we'd gone through, like waiting for and knowing about her and having three boys, and, you know, they were all perfect and meant to be, but there was this, she was coming at the end, like at the end of a rainbow, she was this being that we knew was coming. So it wasn't just, I mean, every baby and every soul is so, this, you know, the same specialness, but there was something unique about her. I already knew that. I already knew that there was something different and that she was coming for a reason. Yeah, and a deep purpose. Mm. I had no idea that would be, yeah, like it just it felt then all of, you know, the unfairness and all of the how could this happen. And I remember we went off to the birth suite, and there was this woman, suddenly there was a whole bustle of people, and there was this woman with dark curly hair, and I grabbed her arm, sucked on the gas and said, why is this happening to me? And she looked at me with tears in her eyes and said, I'm so sorry, I don't know. And then she was gone. I don't know who she was, but I just remember the hair and the midwife and having someone to just like grab and yell at and say, why is this happening? And poor thing. Apparently we affected the whole birth suite that night. There was three stillbirths that night, and one at 20 weeks, one at 30 weeks in us, and there was a significant impact. I think Amelia had some kind of hold on everyone in the birth suite that night. And yeah, like it was so sacred. So yeah, I it's a privilege that I got to be the one, but at the same time, like I often, like, of course I would wish it, not to have any of that and not to go through. I would give up all of that if I could have kept her. And, you know, I'd be a supermarket chick with no, you know, like with no big desires, and like I would rather be someone who just had a normal life. who it could, you know, live out their life doing whatever it was. If I could, you know, give that up to have her, I would, but it's not the way it was meant to be. So
it's incredible that you shared that you had there was this precursor that was happening, right? Like these dreams, you know, you were having these dreams, this culmination of dreams. And I know for myself, I myself had actually had dreams about Luca. So Luca, for those of you who are listening or watching, is my fourth child. And I already had two at that point, and I was about to have, well, I decided I wanted a third baby. So I just instantly got pregnant because that just seemed
like
the fertility. Thank you, fertility gods. And I was really confused, right? Because I thought, well, but you've shown me this vision. And I don't know if you can relate.
Yes, I can.
And because when you have these, when you are intuitive, whether it's in a dream state or in a meditative state.
Or even just unknowing, I get that.
Unknowing. Yes, you could have it. Yeah, unknowing. And my vision that I saw was, and it wasn't in a dream state for me, it was actually in a meditative state, was this is before I decided I even wanted to have a third child. And I was very against having a third child. I was like, absolutely not. I know. God is laughing, isn't he? So I had had this vision of all of my loved ones and almost like these angels, and like, God, I could just, it was so real to me, holding a boy, this like baby boy. And I was like, wow, that felt so real, but I don't want a child. And then I was like, I do want a child. I had the third baby and it was a girl. And then I just remember feeling really confused. So when you obviously had your visions, your dreams, could you kind of speak into, we don't always get what we expect. You know, we kind of see these visions and we think, oh, this is what it is. And then it's like, no, this is what it is.
I had my dream of Amelia before I started having children. So I saw, I didn't actually see her. I saw this name written out on a chalk driveway. It was Amelia, but it was spelt a little bit different. It was like A-M-E-I-L-I-A or something. And I just knew, like, that was just knowing of, okay, this is my daughter, she's coming. And that was before we started trying for babies. And so I had in my head, like, the dream was to have two boys and then a girl. And so I had a miscarriage. My first pregnancy was a miscarriage 6 weeks before we got married. And then I went on to have my first son. I had another miscarriage and then went to have my second son. And by then I was like, okay, cool. You know, like, that's, you know, I've got my two boys. The next one will be a girl, but we'll just leave it a while. And we had planned to do, like, all the, you know, like the ovulation techniques and everything. And then I fell pregnant with my third son, and he was an accident, like a complete surprise, terrible timing. Like, we were going through a lot of financial difficulty, and we had to really think about whether it was, you know, the right thing to do. We sat on it for a week, whether we could bring a baby into the world at the moment. And he was just a little miracle. Like, he defied all the odds. And so so I expected him to be Amelia. Like, that was in my head. And when I got to my 20-week scan and saw another boy, I was like, no, this is not,
like,
this is
I felt so confused. I was like, I remember saying to the sonographer or whatever it is, I'm like, are you sure? Saying, are you sure? And her looking at me dead and gasping, going, yes, I'm sure.
Yes, it's
I'm like, girl. Okay, sorry.
I cried. cried for 2 days. And they talk about, like, I didn't want to admit that to anyone. You know,
I admitted it.
I was happy to have a healthy, of course yeah. We're happy to have a healthy, like, but there is that thing, like, gender disappointment. It is a huge thing. And I felt so guilty for having it. Like, it was my closest friends all were devastated for me as well, because they knew I had 4 stepkids as well. So it wasn't like, you know, it was hard. And but he came, and the minute he was born, I said to my husband, I'm not done, you know, she's still coming. And he said, I know. I know. He knew. Like, it wasn't just like I would see her. So for me, it was like, that was the first dream. All the other things were, I would see her in the street in like another little girl. I would see a blonde little girl. Around Amber's age now, I would see like a 2 or 3 year old with curly blonde hair, and I would catch the glimpse of the back of her hair. She'd turn around and stare at me every time they would, like, not even looking, I'd see it, and then they'd be like staring at me. And I was always in this knowing of like, Amelia's come into their body and just go, hello, I'm here, I'm coming. And so I knew, I just knew she was coming. So I knew that she had a big purpose, but I didn't have any clue of what that was until after she was gone. And then I saw, within a few weeks, I saw my daughter and me, like my grown daughter on stage in a packed arena, talking to people, like giving some kind of talk. And so for me, that meant she was coming back, and that was all that mattered. And ever since she was born and been, I was like, okay, now I've got pressure on me to do whatever it is. And then I've realized that it's, you know, that's not the way God intended it, that it's not a pressure, that it is just what it is. And if that happens, great. But if not, like, it's a vision. And I think that's the thing with, like you were saying, when we're intuitive, we have this expectation that it all plays out in a certain way. But that's what I've had to really let go of, especially lately, is that we can have the knowing, and that, like, we can consciously encode things into our reality. We can, you know, manifest, and I don't really believe in manifesting, but we can draw in what's already for us. But the magic is in the unknowing of how that comes. And if we were to know every single part of it and how it is to evolve, then there would be no magic. We wouldn't get the joy and the bliss of living it out. So, yeah.
I definitely feel that we receive what we need. And sometimes that doesn't show up in the way that we wanted. it doesn't show up in the way that we expect, you know.
Yeah.
It just shows up how it's meant to. Like, exactly. Divinely orchestrated.
Yeah. 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 And that was so evident to everyone who came to her funeral. It was this beautiful, like, I've never seen swarms of butterflies in this garden. Yeah. I've never seen swarms of butterflies like that, but in the crematorium gardens, that, like, you had to weave your way through butterflies, and
wow. And
there was just so much light and beauty and just like the whole sense of just meant to be-ness. If that's even a thing. Yeah, you could feel it. And knowing that was just, like, people came away from that funeral, I think it probably is, for her, those who were there, it's probably the most affected funeral that they probably would have ever been to. And you know, people have told me that there was just so much divine orchestration apparent and energy there that you can't deny it. It's palpable.
I think that it's so there's so much intensity, you know, with such an experience, but that intensity is also matched with such a deep profoundness, because it's quite incredible, isn't it, that a child who, whether, you know, sometimes people have children who they do give birth to and they are here, but they're not here for a long period of time. In obviously in your case, she didn't have that first breath, and yet she has breathed life onto this earth, right? She's breathed so much life into this earth. And I think that's so profound for any human being who's listening to this to go, every single human being, every little baby, everything, there's so much impact and ripples of change. Like you're like Amelia. Amelia has impacted so many lives, right? Yeah. And I think about so many adults, you know, whether you're, you know, maybe you're in your 50s, 60s upwards, you think about the impact and the ripples of change. You have an impact regardless what you do, whether it's positive or negative. But the imprint that these little babies leave when we allow ourselves to be a part of what it's there for, whatever the purpose was there for, and we really honor it, because I think that's another thing that I'd love to speak to you about educating people around how they support mothers who have experienced stillbirth, because I think there are a lot of people who feel, you know, they might have like a little bit of fear around, well, I don't want to upset her. I want to be as respectful as possible, but I also want them to know that I support them. Or maybe they're feeling a bit nervous within themselves, thinking, I don't have the capacity to handle the level of emotion that is present. I'd love for you to educate us, to humbly educate us on how we can, you know, allow mothers who experience stillbirth and miscarriage to feel supported and to feel loved and to know that themselves and also their beautiful babies matter.
Yeah. Can I just share something really? It's on this. It happened to me on Friday. I was rushed into an emergency surgery Thursday night, and thinking like, why me again? Like, I'm getting to the end of this, like my patience with this thing, because I had surgery the week before and it was supposed to be the final fix, and I'm back in surgery again. And I'm now like, okay, I'm allowing myself to feel all of the feelings now. Whereas before I've like, oh, it's okay. Like, it's just the way it is, blah, blah, blah. I'm now like pissed off. Anyway, so I had another surgery and I was going to go into a shared room, and I was, because I've been in hospital so much lately, I know where the wards are, and I was asking which room I'm going into. And apparently this lady was having a panic attack, so I couldn't go in there until she'd been calmed down. And I'm thinking, oh, who am I going in with again? Like, I've had some bad experiences. And then I went in, and I know now why she was having a panic attack, but she had been calmed down and I was taken up, and she was a dear old lady, maybe 80, I think she was 78 years old. And we both kind of were like trying to take a while to get to sleep. And I know that she was having trouble sleeping because of all that had happened. And I was wide awake for some weird reason. I'm never usually like that after surgery. I'm quite like dopey, but I was wide awake. So I'm reading and I'm trying to drink my tea, and then finally drifted off. And in the middle of the night, it was probably about 1 or 2, we were woken by the screams of this woman in a room next door. She was howling and screaming in pain, and they had the doctors there. They were trying to calm her down, and I'm like, I ended up going into an expansive state. And after, like, when I did that, she calmed down. It was amazing. That was the first miracle. But then the lady next to me, she asked the nurse for a cup of tea to try and get back to sleep, and as the nurse left, she started sobbing. And so I said to her, are you upset because of this lady's tears and cries? And she said, yes. Is she having a baby? And I said, no, she's not having a baby. She's just in deep pain, and they're trying to figure it out, but we're not on the maternity ward, because, you know, she was a bit older, so maybe a bit confused. And she said to me, it reminds me of the one I lost. And I just went, what?
Wow.
And she said, yeah. And so I just took a deep breath and I said, I'm so sorry to hear that. How long ago? And she said, 1980. And I was born in 1981. So this is like nearly 40 years. And I asked her a few more questions, and her name was Faith. after three boys, and she was never able to have another baby. And I was just like godsmacked that I was there in that room with her having this experience, because I knew that it was meant. And I said to her, wow, like you wouldn't have been able to speak much on it back then, like 40 years ago. And she said, no, I was never allowed to speak about it. It was a taboo. I've never spoken about it. And that's why she's been holding it in for 40 years. She didn't even tell her sister. It was an 18 or 20 weeks she lost her at. But I was just so affected by the fact that she had kept it in all of these years and was safe to let it out in a room. And someone who knew what it was like was there for, like, it was, we both had the same healing effect on each other. But so that is funny that you bring that up, because she was never able to talk about it for this amount of time she's been holding it in. And I can't even imagine what that would feel like. I know other women, one of my best friend, her, she was the one who was there for me the most. And the reason is because her mother lost a daughter at a day old before her. And so back then they were, it was brushed under the carpet. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't even spoken about. They whisked them away. The only reason why this woman next to me knew that it was a girl is because her husband begged them to tell, because she'd had three boys and they wanted to know whether it was a boy or a girl. Otherwise they would have just taken her and never, you know, they didn't have a funeral or anything like that. So, the biggest thing that I can tell people is, to just let us talk, no matter whether it is just, and I know that it takes a lot of courage to bring it up because you think that most women don't want to talk about it, but that's the opposite of true. I haven't met a single angel mum who doesn't want to talk about her baby, who doesn't want to mention their name, who doesn't want to talk about their birth experience, because even though it was tragic, there is a sacredness in it. Like every birth, there is a sacredness in it. And when you deny that, when you don't let them talk about it, it's like it's a dirty secret. And it's not. It's just, it's the same, if not more special and profound, because that's all they've got. They don't have however many years they've got to live and experience life. We had 12 hours to hold her, 12 hours in you know, the whole of our life. And so every single moment of that, like if I could have recorded every single moment, I would. And when you deny someone just being able, like even if it makes you cry, even if it makes you like think about your own life, and that's a blessing, like to have some gratitude for the smallest things. Like there was so many people who turned the other cheek and who walked away and who couldn't, they felt maybe they were doing the right thing by not talking about it, but it's just like a stab in the heart every single time. It was like I was being denied of my love for her. And like I even had a supplier who I went into, and they hadn't been told, they were all men who were working there, they hadn't been told. And so I was 6 weeks into, and he said, where's the baby, and is she at daycare already? And I just like looked at him and I said, did you not know? Because he'd sent me flowers, like he'd been the one to send flowers, and he just thought that he was sending flowers for the birth of a baby, not for you know, the loss of a baby. And I told him, and his face was just like a ghost. He said, I'm so sorry, I was not told. And it made me mad for him, like the fact that people just don't even speak about it, because
no one's talking about it.
How
can we come together and support the family?
All you need
husband
to do is
husband and wife.
Yeah. Like we had so many beautiful people try and do beautiful things, and for that I'm eternally grateful. But it was just it's the, even now, like it's still a taboo, and it's still this expectation that, and also the aftercare of women. Like I didn't see my doctor as I normally, you know, like you'd go back for your 6 week check and you check the baby, and there wasn't, like, unless I pushed for it, which I didn't, there was one midwife that was supposed to come see me, but I was just not in the mood. So I just cancelled it, and they never followed up. They never. And so there's a whole lack. There's such a gap. And I know that that's changing, and that there are programs and stuff being put in place, but there, you know, you still gave birth, your body still goes through the same aftermath that you do. You're still bleeding for the same amount of time. You're still like, and then there's, you know, your milk dries up. I luckily have never had an issue with that. I never had too much milk anyway, but there was, you know, you still have to go through. Some poor women have to, you know, like, express and make sure that they're doing it the right way so they don't get mastitis. And there's a big gap in the aftermath of aftercare of women.
The aftercare support. Wow. I didn't realize that, was not aware of that at all. Wow. Mm. That's absolutely insane to me. I mean, I feel that mothers who experience that should get like so more. Much more support, like 10 yeah. times more support, you know. Like, I haven't experienced what you have, but for me, I'm like, oh my gosh, mothers get to, they get that, you know. First of all, I think mothers need support in general, but when you know, you don't get to take your baby home with you, right? Why aren't we supporting mothers? What the hell? That pisses me off.
Well, yeah, it was.
I'm glad that you brought that up. You know, create some more. I'm sure there's more people speaking about it, and there are beautiful people who are at the hospital. I'm sure we're so helpful towards you, but you identified a massive gap there, and I can only imagine that. You know, not just the physiological, it's there. You know, that's something that we can absolutely support and address. That should just be a non-negotiable. And then, of course, then we've got the mental, emotional, and the spiritual experience of that process too.
Yeah. And there was, there was a bereavement support, like you get bereavement support through the hospital, so there's a support team, but it's the numbers are astounding for starters. And so there's just not enough of resources. So if you need help, you reach out to them. It's not like there is maybe one or two phone calls. I don't even actually remember. There was one midwife appointment. And then it was like, you reach out to us. There was a support group, and that's how I've met most of my beautiful friends who are angel mums through the support group at MARTA. But that's now no longer a thing. So I wanted to help as well. Like, I wanted to do more. And that's kind of been my,
you had the capacity.
I had the capacity. Calling. Yeah. But I've also come to realize that I speak to it at a different level than what most women who are going through this are ready to hear. And I've banged my head up against the brick wall so many times over the last 3 years. Like, what is it? What God, what is it? What do you want me to do then? What, I've got this experience and I've got this wisdom. How do I combine the two? And I was putting a lot of pressure on myself, like I've wanted to start my own organization and my own, but it's this message of grace and magic that's what my message is that there's grace and grief and magic in the tragic. And some women just won't be ready for that in this lifetime. Maybe they'll go, like, I've experienced this in 5 different lifetimes. So I'm at that point now where I'm ready for it. But it's a big thing. And how do you say to another woman who's lost a baby that your baby died for a reason? It's not true. Like, it's shit. It sucks. Oh. And for, you know, whether it is part of their soul's growth or their, you know, their contract, their evolution, I wouldn't expect anyone to be, like, it's just not a message that I would say to someone. It's just not.
No, it's so just that really lacks compassion, you know, whether that is something that is like your spiritual truth. The truth of the matter is obviously that lacks compassion and empathy and is a denial of that person's very real experience.
Yeah. And it's not, it's, it may have happened for a reason, but at the same time, that it doesn't take away from the grief of it. It doesn't take away from, and when I say it's happened for me, it's happened for a reason, because it's part of her journey. It's part of my journey. It's part, it just is, whether we like it or not, it just is what happened. And if I was to believe that it didn't happen for a reason, the universe would cease to exist in my heart, in my eyes. But that's a very, it's a very high level to think of it at. And
yeah.
That doesn't take away the humanness of all, of it all. So I don't know how. I know that there'll be a foundation of some sort set up in Amelia's name one day, and I don't know exactly how that will help women, but there's a huge gap. There's many gaps in the market.
Yeah. I have a client who I'm sure will watch this, and I would love to connect you two together. And this has been a very real experience for her, literally within the past, I believe it's, it'd be about 3 months now since it happened for her, losing her baby at 8 months. And it's just that I have so much admiration and respect for women who have the courage, and it's kind of annoying that you actually have to have the courage to speak about your own baby. So I wanted you to bring that up, because I think that we all have a responsibility, not even as mothers, right, but just as human beings, to not to deny the existence of your beautiful child, and to deny the love that's in your heart, because that's kind of what we can't deny your journey, and we can't deny the love that exists. It gets to be acknowledged, and it doesn't have to actually be uncomfortable. I think that's really a message I want to share too, is it does feel weird and uncomfortable, but if your heart and your intention is, I love this person, I really love this person, and I'm just going to hold the intention that, what does this person need? And I'm just going to ask them, what do you need?
Would you like
to tell me about your experience? I'm here. I am here to listen. Even literally just saying that, I am here to listen.
I can't fix it. I can't take it away, but I'm here to listen.
I am here to listen. I acknowledge. I mean, let's stop denying that these babies didn't exist, because they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It's just, it might be awkward and it might feel uncomfortable, but you will get so rewarded out of it. Like, if even just listening to someone open their heart up and talk, and even if they just cry, to know that you've held that space, it's a ginormous space, but to know that you've held that for them for that amount of time, whether it was for a few minutes or a few hours, is so rewarding, and will change you in some way. It will shift something inside you that is so profound, and it's with anything, any person that you're holding space for in a moment of pure grace and compassion, whatever's happened to their life. Just, and it's not just for someone in my circumstance, but someone who's lost a brother or a son or a father or what, or even if it's not even a loss, it's just if something really crappy has happened to them, what do you need? And I'm here to listen. It's just you're holding space for them, but the reward that you get from that, and the feeling that you get from that, is beyond what you could actually give to them.
Yes. And holding space, whether you are just, you're a human who's just wants to be there for your loved ones, for maybe you meet a stranger in the street, like, I don't know, maybe you meet a stranger in the hospital, and whoa, profound experience, right? I want to create that space where everything is welcome. Everything is welcome. And who am I to tell you about your experience? That's one of the worst things. If you're a coach, most people who watch this are coaches or aspiring coaches, or you are watching this because you deeply care about humanity, or you want to become your best self. one of the greatest pieces of advice that I can give you with holding space and in self-leadership is when you are in space with others is not to tell them how they feel. Don't tell them how they feel. Don't tell them who they are. Don't tell them what to do. Don't tell them what it means. It's not your place to tell them what their experience means because that's your perception, that's projection. Your role is to shut the hell up.
Yep.
And listen.
And plain, listen.
Simple. Shut the hell up and listen. And just they hold already have, that space.
They have everything they need already. It's infinite. Yes. It's infinite wisdom already inside
trust
them.
Trust in and knowing.
Just by letting them talk, they usually come to their own conclusions anyway.
Always. I've never not have had an experience where they've not come to whatever they were meant to come to at that moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Whatever that looks like.
Exactly. There are a lot of coaches out there who are all, you know, telling and teaching. And I guess that is what coaching is, but a guide, I guess, is the way that I see myself more as a guide and a mentor is to just open the space for you to see yourself, you know, to see what inner wisdom has meant to come through and, you know, open the channel from the infinite and receive that. So, yeah.
I think that's one of the best things that a guide or a facilitator or coach healer can do is to really, really, again, let's come back to what was shared, to have faith, to have faith and to trust that everyone has what they need within them. They just need the space and the, you know, just that space and the energy to be held for them so that they can feel safe to fully explore that.
Yeah.
And I've literally, as a coach, I've never not had a client who didn't have access to their inner knowing. And there are some who it takes longer because there's more layers that have been built up.
Of trust, yeah.
Yep, yeah. But it's just keep peeling those layers back. And there is always more layers.
There's always more.
They keep coming. And then as you pulled off a lot of layers, then it gets really subtle.
Yes.
And there's these tiny little subtle things and you're like, oh, I had that.
Totally.
It's an ongoing journey.
We wouldn't be here if we weren't still peeling back the layers.
Right.
Yeah. We're not Wayne Dwyer.
Oh my gosh, this is so good. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the podcast, Georgia. And
thank you.
To finish off, we have some final questions that I always ask. And my first question to you, normally I would ask, what's your definition of spirituality? But I actually want to switch it up and ask you what your definition of intuition is.
Okay. It's an inner tuition, like it's your inner teacher, your inner knowing, your inner, there are three different, I could go down a rabbit hole, but there are three different types of intuition as I've been taught. One is your gut instinct, which is like a fight or flight. It's a human instinct, I guess. The other is implicit knowledge. So something that you've known over time, that you've done over and over, like the mechanic who knows just by hearing an engine what's wrong with it. And then there's non-local. And that's the intuition that I work with, which is, and as it is, you know, the name of it, it's not from here. It's like non-locally. It's your connection with guides, with the infinite, with your angels, with whatever you want to call it, like with your higher self. And that's, you can use your intuition to guide every single micro and macro decision of your life. And for me, it's just your inner knowing, your inner voice, I guess, your inner wisdom that is always present. You don't need to meditate for hours. You don't need to, you know, have some profound spiritual experience to access it. It's always there, always. If you're tuned in, you can tap into it at any moment. It actually just is. Like if you listen to the subtle voice rather than the loud one is ego. The subtle voice is always like gentler and more firm. Yeah. I could talk about this forever.
I love that description. That was incredible. We definitely have to get you back. I'm sure explore. And then the final one isn't really a question. It's a fill in the blanks. This is, you know, really how you make people feel and what you teach them. This is how they reflect on you, Georgia.
Okay.
So, fill in the blanks.
Okay.
Georgia made me feel.
I feel it comes happy, but I think it's more calm. Calm.
Mm. Georgia taught me.
Grace.
Georgia was always.
There.
Beautiful. Georgia Hansen, everyone. Georgia, where can everyone get in contact with you, connect with you, follow you?
Yeah, on Facebook and Instagram. I'm there, just Georgia Hansen, Georgia M. Hansen, I think, on Instagram. And yeah, I'll be in the next few months. There'll be a really big project. It's called the Chrysalis Magazine, and that will be what so I'm exciting. Focusing. I'm excited. So yeah, that'll be a big thing. But mainly on those two pages is where I'm at the moment.
Cool. We'll have to get you back when that's launched.
Thank you. That'd be amazing. I hope you'll be in there. I hope you'll be
a big part of it. In my head, I'm like, I'm in there. It's happening.
Yeah, there'll be a launch. There'll be a big launch party. And I'm hoping to have people just like you in there. So it'll be exciting.
Well, thank you so much for being
here. Thank you.